Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Daily Friend Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I am joined by Sara Gon. Sara, how are you?
Well, thank you, Nick. Nice to be here.
Good to have you with us. And also Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Good afternoon. Good to be with both of you. Lots, I'm sure, for us to figure out this week. And as usual, our entertainer-in-chief has a story for us, so I look forward to that.
Indeed, indeed. But before we get to that, we have to talk about the stupid flag story that just refuses to die. So I expressed this when we originally talked about this on Wednesday on the show, but I thought this whole controversy around this DA flag burning advert is just kind of silly and sort of missing the point. We have a lot more serious things that we should really be focusing our public attention on. But anyway, the story has now taken And I wouldn't say an unexpected turn, but a depressing turn, which is that, of course, the DA wanted to pay for this advert to be broadcast on a number of stations. And one of the places that it paid to have it broadcast was the SABC, the public broadcaster. However, the SABC has said that it will not be displaying the advert because they say that the advertisement encourages damage to treasured national symbols. And it went on to say the national flag is a national symbol which represents diverse elements of the country and national unity. And it is expected the national flag should be accorded dignity and respect. Now, as you can imagine, the DA is very unhappy with this, with DA leader John Steenhuisen saying that the SABC's decision is an unprecedented attack on our democracy. Deployed ANC cadres at SABC have banned the DA's latest advertisement from the air to hide the truth of how the ANC has burnt our country to the ground, he said on X. Now, this is not actually a new story in the sense that I believe there was a DA advert back in 2016, maybe, which I think had images of the police at either Marikana or the protest where Andries Tatane was killed by the cops. And that advert was also, the SABC refused to air it because they said that it was, I don't know, insulting to the police or discouraging something. I can't remember exactly what it was. But this is, you know, not entirely unsurprising. The SABC is routinely very partisan. It's one of the reasons why I'm just generally skeptical of public broadcasters around the world. I think, you know, you can get good value out of a public broadcaster, but so often, so many countries around the world, they get captured by whoever's in power. The SABC was dominated by the National Party and used as a propaganda tool for the entirety of apartheid. And I don't think it should be any surprise to see that the ANC has in many ways done the same thing here. Sara, let me start with you. Like, you know, if this was ENCA banning this or saying they're not going to fly this advert, fine. You know, they're a private company, whatever. They can do their thing and their viewers will judge them accordingly. But this is the public broadcaster. A degree of impartiality, I think, should be demanded and expected. What do you make of this story?
Well, it certainly should be demanded. I think we've long stopped expecting it. But be that as it may, it's not even the... Given the fact that it is a public broadcaster and we all pay our taxes towards it, the broadcaster should be a little bit more alert to the fact that the various interpretations that can be made from this advert, from the flag burning, are so varied and wide from one spectrum to the other that, you know, to treat the flag as if it's a human being that's being defamed, I think, you know, we get ourselves a bit of a knot with that. The flag is a symbol of, indicates South Africa, is what it does. I mean, if you want to accord it respect and whatever else this SABC wants to do with it, then I would think that, you know, the Lady R event and telling the West where to put its investments and et cetera, by the ANC is not exactly doing the flag any favors. I mean, It's exactly what happens if the Springboks win the Rugby World Cup, the flag becomes a symbol of joy and happiness and success and something that works. If the ANC tells the American government what to do with its investments in South Africa, and it's cozying up to America, to Russia and China and every autocratic dictatorship on planet Earth, then many people will look at the flag as representing something that's less than attractive. So the flag, it's actually the other way around. The flag doesn't reflect South Africa. What the South Africans do will be reflected upon in the flag. So this creating a sort of iconic religious status out of our flag is nonsense. It's A, not appropriate. It's B, it's a symbol that anyone in South Africa can lift up or drag down. And free speech is about just that. The very fact that the SABC stated that it had taken note of President Ramaphosa's abhorrence says more than it should have said about the reasons for not flighting this ad. And as I've said, because we all pay for it, members of the public are entitled to complain to ICASA or the Advertising Regulatory Board or whatever. But that's not the SABC's job. The SABC's job is to be a public broadcaster rather than the state broadcaster that in reality it is.
So I think I do very slightly disagree with you on some of the flag being held in some sort of reverence. I mean, I agree with your sort of larger point. I think that, you know, to take it too far is just completely ridiculous. And, you know, its status in the world is very much something that is determined by our government and our people and how they behave. But I do think there is some value in having a kind of social respect for this thing, this inanimate object. But I kind of also think that in a sense, that's kind of moot, because the problem here is that this is not an anti-flag ad in context. If you watch it, it is pro the South African flag. It is saying, this is a terrible thing that's happening to our country. Here's the flag to represent it. It's burning up. Everything's bad, but we can save it. This is what is driving me absolutely mad about this whole thing, is a whole bunch of people who definitely know better, completely pretending like they don't understand what the very obvious subtext of this visual imagery is. Chris, help me out here before I lose my mind.
I mean, I might just help you, sort of give you that last little push that is needed. I like to play that particular role. A few thoughts. So, I mean, on that sort of maybe societal respect for the flag, I want to agree there, but I want it to be, it needs to be organic and substantive, and people need to understand why they would respect it. If it's propped up by your state broadcaster, for example, if there's only respect for it because it's at the very top of a 100-meter tall flagpole when money could have been used for other items, for example, then I think you ask questions about what does it represent and what is that sort of respect actually based on, if anything. I mean, flag burning, sort of as a qua flag burning, this isn't what exactly the ad was focused on. It was, I think, more substantive than that. But flag burning is a form of expression that is protected under Section 16 of the Constitution. And thank God for that. I'd much rather live in this kind of society where you can have either physical or metaphorical flag burning versus this is treasonous and we as government are going to outlaw this kind of thing and throw you in jail. So I'm not saying that it's going to be an effective advert or anything like that. You can have those questions around political strategy. But the fact that you can do this, to me, already adds value to the South African flag as a concept and as it is currently formulated. So various things at play here. I think should this go to court or some sort of dispute, I don't see a strong case for the SABC. And as usual, when you ban something, either as a private broadcaster or public, more and more people are going to want to talk about it. And that's going to be the discussion. So inadvertently then, and throughout this past week, people like the president and others, Minister Zizi Kodwa, using all their platforms to talk about this particular advert, giving it so much airtime in the lead up to the elections. It's actually interesting. Maybe the DA should do a cost benefit analysis, how much they've won in terms of impact, free airtime, as it were. When you try and ban something, say it's treasonous, people are going to be like, maybe I should go look for myself. Actually, what does this say? What is behind this? Maybe I should listen to what the DA is saying. So inadvertently, maybe giving a boost to the DA. It shows, again, I think the pressures on the current government, how much they realize they're under pressure as we head into the elections. You don't necessarily consider your strategy in terms of responding to your opponents. You let them set the narrative and then you respond to it. But it shows that you are not coordinated. You're always catching up, whether it's the DA, whether it's MK. Yeah, I think this is indicative maybe of the wider ANC, NEC's lack of cohesion as well.
Yeah, just to kind of highlight that point, I just went and looked at the DA's YouTube channel. And that alone has about sort of 400,000 views in the last 4 days since this thing was put up. Sarah, do you have any final thoughts on this issue?
Just the fact that it may not have been the ad I would have devised at this point, but as Chris says, you know, it's almost the DA's position is being sold by the opposition. And perhaps it's a little unfair to speculate that it's a sort of ad the ANC would love to have flighted if it could accuse another party of having done to the country what it has done. But it can't. So the flag, can you imagine if the flag were a thing, or I mean a thing with the real thing, a live thing, as opposed to a computer-generated image for a certain target market? Maybe looking down and thinking, I mean, I can see the cartoon, and looking down and looking at all this hoo-ha and outrage and virtue signaling and thinking, dear God, you know, what are these South Africans coming to? It's in a way, I think it's a moment of brilliance for the DA when letting it flight for whatever time they've paid for would have come and gone, and probably most people wouldn't have paid all that much attention to it. So I think it's an own goal for the opponents of the advert.
So we're going to stay a little bit on this one because there's a sort of related thing that I actually forgot to mention up till now. But before I get to that, I'm going to do something very rare, which is, you know, sometimes YouTube comments are great, sometimes they're not so great. However, I think the top three YouTube comments here on this particular DA advert, I just had a look at them now, kind of speak to me a little bit about this one. One says, wait a minute, to me there's nothing wrong with this ad since the flag comes back to life. And someone said, they returned it, Moss. And then another comment says, this ad proves how our education has failed. yeah, maybe. But on the topic of the speech environment of South Africa, so you are very concerned that the so-called hate speech bill has been signed into law by the president. Could you just talk very briefly about that?
No, just we've been amongst other groupings who've been opposed to criminalizing hate speech. And the president has just signed it into law, very much a pre-election gambit, because, oh my God, you know, there's so much hate speech in this country, which is not actually true. The IRR surveys have shown it to be at the bottom of the list of South Africans concerns, unemployment being the obvious number one for the last 15 years. But the idea of criminalizing hate speech, to me, is the absolute anathema to free speech. And invariably, in any event, attempts to criminalize are quite difficult because the onus of proving hate speech as a crime is very high. So it's going to get a lot of it's going to get bogged down in the court. And can you just imagine with the amount of hate speech that is being expressed around the conflict in the Middle East, it could theoretically be used in a way that the Scots, to show their antithesis towards their former leader, Hamza Yusuf, who put in place a very stringent hate speech act. He took it to the end. And the first thing that happened is that thousands of complaints of hate speech were leveled against him for making a Nazi speech about whites in Parliament a while ago. So I think there are so many other ways of dealing with hate speech, criminal actions related to hate speech that already exist and have long existed. Assault, maybe murder, maybe damage to property. Look, it's also unconstitutional. We won't go into the details of that, but it's going to be attacked on that basis. And my feeling is, don't criminalize hate speech. Free speech is about hearing what you really don't want to hear, and we've had to do a lot of that recently.
All right, let's move on to our next story, and this is some comments from ANC Chairman Gwede Mantashe and also Minister of Mining and Energy. Gwede Mantashe is obviously, as with all the bigwigs in the ANC right now, on the campaign trail, and he was talking to voters in, I think this was the Eastern Cape. Some of the voters complained that the price of oil, or rather of fuel, is far too high. And Mantashe used this opportunity to hit out at NGOs for the cost of oil, the cost of fuel, rather. He said that that people in the area must campaign against NGOs that, in his words, quote, block development, saying they are costing the country. He says that opportunities to mine, to drill oil off South Africa's coast were blocked essentially by an enormous amount of legal action by environmental groups for the most part. And as a result, foreign investors were going overseas to other places in the world to set up shop there. In this case, he said Ivory Coast managed to poach an oil drilling development from us because of that. Now, I will just say, as a sort of aside here, it's kind of interesting that Mantashe can recognize this fact of economics in the way that negative, making life difficult for business will cause you to lose out to international competition. He can see that in the case of oil, but then when it comes to mining, he suddenly forgets this fact, apparently. But anyway, he said, quote, society must be mobilized for their own development, so you don't wait for NGOs which are foreign funded. Many of them don't know the area, but they take over and give you people some change, and those people join them in protests against development. That issue is a campaign on its own that we must pursue. We have to drill here at home and find our own fuel. When NGOs are taking us for a ride, you keep quiet. When they're taking us to court, we want to drill, you keep quiet. He was criticizing a taxi driver who was complaining about fuel costs there. Now, I'm sort of in two minds about this. On one hand, it's the right of civil society to take government to court and sort of hold their feet to the fire, particularly when they're violating their own regulations and laws. But on the other hand, there isn't enough discussion in the public space about what the costs are of driving away fossil fuel development. You can make a lot. There's a lot of arguments out there. So we mustn't have this development because it's going to pollute the land, because it's going to damage wildlife, because it's going to cause climate change, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. Those are all good points. But the other side does have costs too, which is that when you drive away investment like this, you're going to probably see higher fuel costs. Now, that being said, I don't think the ANC would actually reduce fuel costs that much if we had oil drilling here, because it's just too much money to be made. But there are real costs to human lives. Taxes are less because you don't have that economic development. People who could have gotten jobs, everything from sort of high paid engineers and such to, the poor people who are like doing the kind of basic work on a new facility or something like that. They are all deprived opportunities. The rich ones will probably go overseas for them, and the poor ones will just sit and starve. So I think he's right to highlight that there are some real costs to when you take kind of actions like this against a development. Chris, what do you make of this story?
Yeah, I want to have my cake and eat it too in terms of disagreeing, but then also not disagreeing for the sake of, oh, this is Gwede Mantashe saying it. So I think very good points here on the part of the minister. I want to write an op-ed in which, yes, I agree with Gwede Mantashe. That, though, might then let him and his colleagues off the hook in terms of policy formation. So let's assume that you could deal with some of these cases you know, in court, and that the government side, let's say, wins that particular case so that drilling can go ahead, et cetera, et cetera. Have you built a conducive enough policy environment for new exploration to happen? At the end of November last year, for example, the Central Energy Fund, they said that they're going to appoint a technical partner before the end of 2023 to help resuscitate the mothballed facility, the SAPREF facility in Mossel Bay. So you can have drilling, but you don't then have the manufacturing capabilities to help refine things, et cetera, et cetera. So then that would make, to me, the minister's case even stronger, that you would say, yes, the government realizes we need to tap sources of cheaper energy, things like oil, gas. We need that economic development, that boost to the economy. You need cheap, abundant electricity supply, energy supply, that kind of thing. That sort of thing, to me, would really bolster what he's saying in this particular case. So his own policy decisions as minister, especially in mining, but also his colleagues in other areas, to me, then undermine what he is saying here, if you'll excuse the pun. And just the last point before I hand over to Sara. Since January of 2000, petrol users have seen a 335.98% increase in fuel taxes since January of 2000. So if you're concerned about the high cost of energy, what can you as government do to deal with administered prices, the fuel levy, those taxes that you take? Yes, you're fighting with environmental groups on various things, but change things that are within your ambit to make energy supply in various forms at least somewhat more cheaply available.
Yeah, right. That's a crucial point to sort of highlight here, is that, you know, that NGOs might be, especially in the sort of long term, adding to the cost of fuel, but the immediate things are much more to do with, you know, taxes and other stuff we've got on the fuel levy. Sara, what do you make of this story? And you know, this is not an unfamiliar line of argumentation from Gwede Mantashe. He is one of the few politicians in the country to very publicly defend fossil fuel development. What do you make of this?
Well, forgive me, Father, for I'm about to sin, because in this respect, and this respect only, because I otherwise agree with Chris, I do agree with him. And it's in this, in respect to the fact that you have a very well-resourced, capable, out-of-the-starting-blocks NGO sector that wants to preserve the environment and prevent people from being exploited. But the science that they rely on, to say the least, is questionable. And, you know, it's not in the ambit now to go into it, but it's certainly debatable, and certainly debatable whether any detriment to our resources, our natural, you know, marine resources, etc., as to whether such any detriment would be, if at all, would be lasting. What sort of time frame, if any, it would cover. But your best chance of actually preserving wildlife, landscape, etc., in the long run, is by marrying the two as best as possible and getting the big oil companies and the big fuel companies to do the investigation and to actually exploit any find that they may have. It's because they are absolutely alert and have the sort of restrictions and obligations in place to mitigate any damage. The minute you get in Joe Schmo and friend of ANC Cadre Pty Limited involved, the chances are both the people and the resources are going to suffer. And no wonder it's an issue being complained about in the Eastern Cape, because a lot of those potential fuel resources are, well, a lot, but a number of real potential game changers are being found off the Eastern Cape coast. And it suggests that, you know, that in all that sort of virtue that's being signaled by the eco warriors, the people who the aspect of all this that is actually being ignored is a human one. And that is, in every term, including political, in the long run, untenable.
Yeah, exactly right. Chris, any final thoughts on this one before we move on?
Just this sort of situation will likely continue for the time being, especially given the sort of current policy trajectory. So instead of changing things that are within government's actual ambit, they'll find always something else or someone else to blame. At the end of the day, it's the South African economy and the South African citizen who suffers because you don't have cheap, abundant sources of energy supply. But I think, yeah, it's a useful narrative point. So look for that in the future again for Montashe and others to continue using. It's always something outside their control. It's always something that happens to them. They're never agency givers. They're always takers of things that happen to them.
Right. Which is, as it turns out, a very effective way of doing politics, but it's also kind of bizarre that it is so effective to constantly say, the ANC has done this pretty much since they came to power, of saying simultaneously, we're powerless and also everything good is because of us, which is a little bit.
Well, if they want more power, let us take for more fuel.
Indeed. Okay, let us move on to our last story. And this is one of those ones where you just sort of have to go, oh. This is based off of reporting from News24, who say that Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, was traveling around in Nanda, in the north of Durban, the township there, and he was campaigning for the ANC. And he was traveling around in a G-Wagon, a sort of armored vehicle, which is extremely expensive. Costs something like 3 million rand, allegedly, according to the News24 reporting. This was provided to him by a guy who's been linked to corruption and is on trial for corruption at Fort Hare, the University of Fort Hare. And it's estimated that if this vehicle was in fact rented rather than bought or owned, it costs around 35,000 rand per day to drive it around. What makes this kind of awkward, by the way, Kilan Balula has denied that any of this was paid for. In fact, he says this was simply provided to him free of charge. Well, that also sounds a little bit dodgy too, but anyway. he went around in his 3 million rand car to go and tell people about how the ANC is super great because they gave everyone a 350 rand a month social relief of distress grant. As the story notes, that's 1% a month of the cost of this vehicle per day. If you wanted a greater explanation of the kind of ways that South Africa has sort of gone wrong in the past couple of years, and at least the last decade, this is a really strong one. You've got a person who has managed to benefit enormously from political power going to preach to poor, desperate people who are happy to get 350 rand a day about how they now should return him to power because of that 350 rand. What do you make of this?
Nick, I think you're being very unfair to Fikile Mbalula. I think he is going into the township to say, notwithstanding the meager 350 rand a month we bestow upon you, I'm an example of aspiration writ large. I am here, see me. I'm not entirely sure, though, why he needs a bulletproof vehicle, because he's a national treasure. I mean, can you imagine if Fikile became the president? I mean, the mood would lighten, even if nothing else changed. The mood would definitely lighten. So I think we're being unduly harsh about the alleged hypocrisy and, rubbing nose in the disadvantaged faces. So,
as a political figure, Fikile Mbalula certainly never ceases to amuse. Chris, what do you make of this story?
I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. So in the same episode of the Daily Friend Show, we've given praise to Gwede Montashe and Fikile Mbalula. So let's just, I don't know what that says about this particular election season, silly season, et cetera, et cetera.
And what is that? I think someone in a comment once called us Boer propaganda. We'll take that.
Just on Mbalula himself, I would recommend, what might protect him more is if he draped himself in the South African flag and then walked around, because no one would want to disrespect the flag by attacking him, for example. So that's more protection than a bulletproof G-Wagon. Someone should also please do some sort of calculation or graphic about if you have one G-Wagon, how many then grants, 350 Rand grants, for example, could you pay? How many RDP houses? I think it's useful to look at those. And just the last point in his statement on his X account, in all caps, which of course tells you that someone is being very rational and serious, and they're definitely telling the truth always if it's all caps. At the end of the statement, he says, our focus is on the election campaign. We will not be sidetracked by sideshows that seek to sensationalize our campaign. So once again, yes, the ANC machinery is kicking into gear as it always does before elections. But you see chinks here and there where there are distractions. They want to talk about what the DA is doing, what others are doing. They're talking about this particular piece of reporting in News 24. So where's the focus actually? And to me, again, that betrays some of the internal psyche of what's happening in the NEC and the stresses that they're all operating under. So yeah, maybe we should be a little bit more kind on this particular Friday.
I must say that to take your joke seriously, if I may commit that sin, Sarah, if he is being an aspirational figure here, he's being exactly the wrong kind of aspirational figure, right? He's basically showing up and saying to people, if you don't chase political power and make connections and get, you know, involved with all the hobnob and chase power and rent seek and all those negative, destructive, poverty increasing behaviors, and all you can expect to live with is a 350 Rand grant. But if you do those things, then maybe you too will be able to swan around in a G-Wagon while visiting the poor. Let's just say that if Herman Mashaba or John Steenhuisen or did anything like this, I would bet a lot of money that the SABC would run that as the head story for at least a week. but anyway... Sarah, any very final thoughts before we close up for today?
I'm about to harness my inner Carl Niehaus. Viva Mbaks, viva!
Oh, yeah, we might have Carl Niehaus in Parliament soon, which is, I'm not sure what to think of that. I can see upsides and I can see downsides, mostly downsides, but there may also be some amusing moments. But anyway, thank you very much for watching. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I won't be here on Monday because it is my birthday, but the show will be hosted by McCorn and Marja. And I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you soon. Cheers, everyone.